Okay, we're getting closer to the end of the Aser Sedibris. Last time we learned murder, stealing, and we discussed it doesn't only mean, you know, simple murder and simple stealing, it's much more than that. Okay, the next mitzvah, the next one of the Aser Sedibris, the eighth one of the Aser Sedibris, the Torah says, no, I'm sorry, the ninth one. L'san of Re'acha et Shaker. You're not allowed to bear false witness against your neighbor. And we'll see, there's a lot of definitions. What does it mean, false witness? Because later on, in the second one of Aser Sedibris, it says, L'san of Re'acha et Shav, which means a vain witness. Here it says a false witness. And we'll discuss the difference. Basically, the Rambam says an interesting halacha, and this is brought down in many different places. What happens if Moshe Rabbeinu came over to you and says, listen, you know I'm not going to lie. I need you to testify that this guy lent me $100. Moshe Rabbeinu is not going to lie.
You didn't see it.
You didn't see it. The Torah says that is part of this prohibition of testifying false witnesses, false testimony. Because even though you heard it from somebody who's 100% honest and trustworthy, nevertheless, if you didn't see it, this is what the Torah says, it's called a shaker. It's called a false testimony. Because you didn't see it or you didn't hear it. Another interesting thing, witnesses have to see it, not hear it. According to Halacha, it says, Hurah, the witness has to actually, or obviously if they hear, I mean, if they hear a guy's admission about something. But again, it can't be that you heard it from somebody else, or even a witness from a witness. You're not allowed to even testify what's called Eid Mipi Eid. You're not allowed to listen to another witness who saw something happen, and he says, listen, I saw it happen. And you trust the guy 100%, you're still not allowed to listen to him and testify based on that.
Can we ask why?
What?
Can we ask why?
Yeah, because the Torah says you're not a witness. The definition of witness is that you testified that you saw it happen.
Also, you're calling the guy a liar, right?
The Which guy?
The guy you trust, the guy you have emunah.
You're not saying he's not a liar. You could come to court and say, this guy told me, but Beis Din will not accept it as a witness. Witness means what you saw happen. Now, it's interesting because in Halacha, there's two types of witnesses. There's two types of witnesses. One in Halacha terminology, they're called Eide Birur, witnesses that testify and clarify that something happened. And then there's what's called Eide Kiyum, witnesses that make it happen. For instance, if I lent you $1,000, Halacha says you should always do it in front of witnesses. Why? Because what happens if you deny the $1,000 loan? I have no proof. Right? If I lend you $1,000, and then I come say, okay, pay up the debt, you say, what are you talking about? I don't even know who you are. $1,000, what are you talking about? You never lent me $1,000. You have no proof. Right? So there it says, either you document it, you write a shtar with two witnesses sign, or you do it in front of witnesses, because then you have proof that it happened. What happens though, if I lent you $1,000, and you admit to the $1,000 loan, everybody is admitting to it. You don't need witnesses. Right? If you come to court, the borrower comes to Beis Din and says, yes, I borrowed from him the $1,000. You don't need witnesses. But, Marshal Kiddushin, marriage, or get, a man by a wedding, chuppah, has to come and give the ring to the woman, or money, whatever it is. The custom is to use a ring. And he says, you betrothed to me with this ring, according to the laws of Moshe in Israel. Right? And you need two witnesses to watch it happen. What happens if a man and a woman go alone in a room, nobody's in the room, a man gives the woman a ring in private and says, They both walk out of the room. She says it happened. He says it happened. It's worthless. The question, why is it worthless? By the loan, if they both admit, you don't need any witnesses. They both agree. What do you need witnesses for? So what do you care if they both agree? There's no question that the man gave the woman a ring. Halacha says, the Gemara says, Ein cheshishin l'kedushin. The Gemara says in Kedushin, it's not even a doubtful Kedushin. It's worth, you don't even need a get on a millionth of a doubt. The woman is not married. Why not? Because sometimes the Torah says, witnesses are not there to verify it happened. That's in monetary laws, the witnesses verify it happens. Sometimes the Torah says, witnesses make it happen. They make it happen. Just like when the man gives the woman the ring, he has to give her the ring. Part of the process is that two witnesses testify that it happened. It's not to verify. It's to make it happen. That is by Kedushin and by get. If a man gives a woman a get in front of nobody and there's no witnesses signed on the get, he just takes a right to kosher get, gives it to the woman, she's not divorced. Why not? Because the answer is witnesses make it happen. That's b'chlal in the din of witnesses. So even in verification witnesses, if you didn't see it yourself or hear it yourself from the person who's a litigant, for instance, if I come over to you and I say, listen, I borrowed $1,000 from Yankel. I told it in front of two witnesses. Even though they didn't see the loan happen, they can testify that I owe $1,000 because I admitted it. But if they heard from another witness, I want you to know that he borrowed from Yankel $1,000, they're not allowed to testify. That's what the Torah says, Elisan Evereacha Eit Shoket, you are testifying falsely because you cannot testify something that you didn't see. Even if the most reliable person in the world, Moshe Rabbeinu, told it to you. Okay, now, the question is, and the Mefarshim explained, this is why it's interesting expression here. Witnesses testify. They don't answer. What does the Torah say? Leisa'an nevereacha means don't answer. Why doesn't the Torah say, Leisa'id bereacha etchaker? You're not allowed to testify. The Torah doesn't say you're not allowed to testify falsely. The Torah says, Leisa'ane. What does Leisa'ane mean? The Mefarshim explain. That you're answering based on what somebody else told you. That's no good. Even that's no good. So you have to make sure that that you actually saw it happen and so on and so forth. One second. The Targum Yonasan, by the way, just explains that the punishment for false testimony is the sky's darken. But there's no rain and famine hits the world. That's the punishment for testifying falsely. What?
Well, but the person's not allowed to testify on themselves, right?
You could. You're not believed.
What does it mean to testify themselves?
If I come to Beis Din and say, you know, I just killed somebody.
They can't believe
it. Here in America, admission of guilt is held. You plead guilty, you're guilty. In Torah law, it's worthless.
But isn't it?
Not, but in monetary laws, if I say I owe you $1,000, and two witnesses testify, no, you don't. I still owe the $1,000. Why? The Gemara's expression is Haydaz Baldin. Is kamei edim dami. Admission of monetary only is like like 100 witnesses. Even though, in halacha, two witnesses and 1,000 witnesses are equal. Two witnesses and 1,000 equal witnesses are exactly equal. But a person in monetary laws testifying that he owes money is even stronger than the testimony against him by witnesses. Why? There's a lot of it. The Ksos has a whole four reasons why. But the simple reason is, I can obligate myself to pay money, even though the Torah says I don't. Torah might say you don't owe the money, because two witnesses are testifying you don't. But I can obligate myself to money that the Torah doesn't say, doesn't obligate me. But Bechlal, that's also a big chiddush in testimony. Two witnesses say guilty. 1,000 witnesses say not guilty. They're equal. Not only that, 1,000 witnesses testify. Doesn't matter in what. And one of the 1,000 people is a relative. All 1,000 become no good.
What happened to majority then?
There's no majority by witnesses. In court, Beis Din, majority opinion of the judges. That's why, by the way, obviously everything in Torah, I mean, they all got it from us, but Torah is very different than the secular system. Most court, a jury is 12 people. So you can have a hung jury of 6 and 6. Right? In Torah, there is no such thing as an even number of judges. Never. It's 3, it could be 7, it could be 11, it could be 23, it could be 71. There is no Beis Din, because if you have 20 people in the court, 10 say this, 10 say that, what are you going to do? Torah always demands that you should be able to have a majority. So, the Torah says, and this is completely illogical. 2 in 1,000 is equal, is not logical. L'cha'era, 1,000 should have more force than 2. Another thing that doesn't make sense. If 1,000 witnesses say that this happened, what? Hello? Middle of a class. Okay. You had a good trip? Okay, good. Okay, bye. It wasn't supposed to be.
Positive.
What?
Sound?
It's so for years. It's just always on vibrator off.
Is that for me, Rabbi?
Yeah, it was for you. They want you to sing in the mikveh. Now, if the Torah says, let's say, 1,000 witnesses say Reuven killed Shimon. And from the 1,000 witnesses, 2 guys are relatives. So even though you have 999 kosher witnesses.
998.
No.
From 1,000.
Yeah, but one's relative, so only one's no good.
Oh.
So even though you have 999 or 998, doesn't matter. They're still all no good. Why? Edus, the part of them are no good, they're all no good. And as we learned, that's why, by a wedding, when they designate the witnesses to see the ring giving, they call up the names of the witnesses, and usually they even add, to the exclusion of all others. What are they basically saying? They're excluding everybody else from testifying. Because under the chuppah you have a father, and a father-in-law, and a brother, and a grandfather, and a cousin, all these non-kosher witnesses. They're all relatives. So, how could they see the ring giving if everybody else is also watching the ring giving, and everybody's watching it? So the answer is, you exclude everybody else from testifying. So who's allowed to testify? Just the 2 witnesses that you designated. Otherwise, you have a question on the Kedusha. What?
If you have... Is it like the...
I didn't answer. There was one question I didn't answer yet, though. Why? Oh, why? But you can't admit guilt. Okay, what?
Is it only a problem if they're related to the person on the stand?
Or to each other.
Even if they're related to each other?
Witnesses cannot be related to each other, to either one of the litigants, or either one of the judges. Nobody.
Logically, Rabbi, I mean, the guy, you know that the people were there. Logically, they know, I know, maybe they were in the room. They know that it happened. They know that they were...
So the Gemara asks, so what happens if there's a murder and 10 people saw the murder, and 2 of the 10 happened to be in a father and a son walking in the street. So what do you do? You know what you do? Only the father or the son goes to testify, and the other one goes to sleep. Because if they both come to court to testify, then it's going to disqualify the whole witnesses. Now, coming back to what we started this whole discussion with.
What is the logic?
Well, there's no logic. There's no logic.
The Gemara doesn't explain this.
There is no logic.
Is this considered a
chok? It's not a chok. A chok is an mitzvah that's illogical. This is a law in the laws of testimony that the Torah Gemara says is exeris akosif. Now, one second. Now, what happens if a guy comes to Beis Din and he says, Beis Din, guess what I just did? I just killed that guy. I threw the bomb on the London subway over there and I killed all those people. According to Halacha, Beis Din says, go home, have a nice day, go out to dinner. He's not believed. Why isn't he believed? So there's a few reasons. One reason is, you can't testify against yourself because you're related to yourself and a relative is not a kosher witness.
And what?
A relative.
Secondly, another reason is, because a person is not believed to make himself wicked. Ain't on the mason mezatz me rasha. A person is not believed to make himself a rasha. So if he comes to Beis Din and says, Beis Din, you know what? I just ate chazer. Give me with me. Give me malchus. Beis Din cannot give it to me. He's not believed.
Oh, so we can do a lot of things in the world.
No.
Without being believed.
No.
So the guy could steal the money and say, you know what? You can't.
One minute. That doesn't mean that you didn't do an aveda and God's not going to punish you.
I'm not speaking about God. I'm speaking about.
Yeah, I know you're not speaking about God, but we do.
People here in this world. How do you punish a person if they did the bombing?
So God punishes them. That's what the Gemara says.
But the guy is admitting. The guy is admitting that he stole the
money. He's not believed.
How he killed
somebody. He's not. Let me ask you a question. Moshe Rabbeinu was a nice guy. Yeah, Moshe Rabbeinu was a religious Jew, correct? Aaron HaKohen, very nice guy, very religious Jew. They probably never lied. Yeah? Moshe and Aaron are going for a walk. Going jogging. Moshe and Aaron. And they come and they testify and they see, nobody else is around. Moshe and Aaron see Reuven kill Shimon. They see their own eyes. Yeah? They come to Beis Din, Moshe and Aaron, because his din is, if you know testimony, you have to come to Beis Din. That's the halacha, you're not allowed to hold back with testimony. Moshe and Aaron come to Beis Din and say, hey Beis Din, guess what? We were out jogging on the way to collect the money, and we saw one guy killing the next guy. Nobody else was there, we saw it. Beis Din says, you know what, you're wonderful people, you're great leaders, you're great tzaddikim, but you know what? Sorry, we can't do anything to this guy.
You can't get away with murder.
Why can't we do anything to the guy? Because you two are relatives. Relatives are not kosher witnesses. We don't have any kosher witnesses testifying that the guy killed him.
What if they don't separate?
Now, if Moshe and Aaron and a third guy saw the murder, okay, so either Moshe or Aaron come to Beis Din, the other one doesn't go to Beis Din, so Moshe comes with Yankele to Beis Din, and then you have 2 kosher witnesses. Now, in monetary laws, I just mentioned you, because it's very important laws in the concept, of, even though it's nothing to do with this really, because this Torah says don't lie, don't bear false testimony. In monetary issues, one witness has a power. In murder, in capital punishment, in any form of punishment, one witness is worthless. In monetary law, one witness is powerful, but not as powerful as 2. For instance, if I say to you, you owe me $1,000, and you say to me, prove it, and I bring 2 kosher witnesses that you owe me the $1,000, you have to pay the $1,000. If I don't have any witnesses, you don't have to pay me because I have to prove it, right? I want to take money out from you. I have to prove it. What happens though if I say you owe me $1,000 and you say prove it and I bring one witness? Not two. I only have one witness. The din is one witness forces the defendant to swear a biblical oath that he doesn't have to pay. That means if I say to you, you owe me $1,000, and I have one witness, you're my witness, that he owes me $1,000. Right? So if I would have two witnesses, you would have to pay me the $1,000. No question. If I have only one witness, the halacha is Bezin says to my borrower, listen, there's one witness, you have to swear a biblical oath that you don't owe him the money. And if he swears that he doesn't owe him the money, he does not pay him. You have to swear against the witness.
He has to swear.
Yep. And if he doesn't, or he can't, he has to pay. I'll give you an example. If I say to you, you owe me $1,000, and you say, you know what? I don't remember. I don't remember. Bezdin cannot extract $1,000 from him. Because I don't have any proof. He doesn't remember. What happens though if I bring one witness that says you owe me the money, but you say I don't know? I'm not saying no, I don't know, I don't remember. Now, the witness forces you to swear that you don't owe me the money. But you can't swear you don't owe me the money because you don't know. So the din is you have to pay. Miteich she'ena yochel lishava mishalim.
Rabbi.
There's a beautiful classic example for this in the Gemara. It's called Nasud Rababa in Baba Basra. There's a case, the Gemara tells a story. There was a case, a guy said, you walked out of my house with a silver becher. You walked out of my house with a silver becher. I say, you gone if you stole my becher. You say, what do you mean I stole my becher? Of course I took the becher, but it's mine. It's not. The taker says, but it's mine. And I bring one witness that you took the becher. So what would you really have to swear? That you didn't take the becher. But you can't swear that you didn't take the becher because you said you took the becher. But it's yours. So the din is you have to give it back.
But you have to give it, but it's his.
So how do you know whose it is?
You just said it's his.
He says it's his. No! He takes my becher. Let's go. He takes my pen, this Ganef. He takes my pen. Yeah? I say, what? I'm going looking at him. You're just this guy here. I can't pick on her. He's my witness. A guy takes my pen. Now, normally, if I see somebody going into your house and taking something, the assumption is it's yours. If they're taking it from you, obviously the assumption is yours. Now, he walks out of the house with my pen. Yeah? I said, where are you going with my pen? You're stealing my pen. What are you doing? He said, what are you talking about? It's my pen. I lent it to you. It's my pen. He says it's his pen. So I bring a witness that says, he says, he's my buddy, he says that he saw him take the pen. So technically, you would have to swear that you didn't take it. But you can't swear you didn't take it because you said, I did take it, but it's mine. So you can't swear, so you have to pay.
Unless you can prove that it's his.
Right. Well, if you prove it, you prove it.
So you Rabbi, for something
one second. Age before beauty.
American justice system, and I've seen.
We're not learning American justice system, so let's not even discuss it.
Has nothing to do with the American justice
system? No, we're learning the Torah justice system.
Okay. Because the more the more witnesses you bring when you...
I know, that's why I said we're not doing the secular with the secularist.
Okay. All right.
So he may pay for something that could have been his because he cannot swear?
But there's one witness that says you owe him.
What about if the witness is biased?
Then he's not a kosher witness. We're talking about a kosher witness.
That won't lie.
That doesn't lie.
Okay. So for sure.
A lot of people won't lie, but they lie anyway.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
What?
Non-monetary.
Like what? What?
It's one witness by...
Because Eid Echad Namen Bisunin. That's a different law that we didn't even get into yet. There's a law that when it... I'll give you a simple example. Sometimes one witness is believed. Not in monetary laws. Over there you need two. Money, mammon. Kesef. Mammon.
No, you said monetary laws, you need one
witness. No, you need two to extract money. One makes you swear.
Okay.
But in kosher and treif, eight echon nemen be isurin. I'll give you a simple example. You eat in a restaurant. How do you know it's kosher? Because the mashgiach testifies it's kosher. How many mashgichim do you have?
One.
So one witness is enough?
In this case, it would be because of his position.
Position doesn't mean nothing.
If I testified it's kosher, they have rum not to believe me.
It's probably true.
But a mashgiach testifies.
I believe you.
How about the mashiach testifies? Now, that's why, by the way, it says in Allah an interesting thing. A guy goes home to eat dinner. His wife cooked dinner. Yeah? So Allah discusses, it's very interesting. How can you eat in your house? How do you know it's kosher? No, really, how do you know? Think about it. You need to testify that something's kosher. You go home, your wife cooked dinner, or your mother cooked dinner. How do you know it's kosher? What's the answer? When it comes to kosher and treif, iser and heter, treif and one witness is believed, even a woman, because you don't need kosher witnesses. By the way, the fact that a woman is not a kosher witness is also not logical. Right. It's exerce a kosef. Women are not allowed to testify in the law. But when it comes to kosher and treif, I'll give you another example. A woman was impure. She goes to the mikveh. She comes back and she tells her husband, we should go by the mikveh. But there were witnesses. Why is she believed to say she went to the mikveh? The answer is...
And she's a relative. And she's a relative of the husband.
Yeah, whatever. She's a relative and a woman and everything. She in the gap. Everything can go wrong. The answer is, Eid Echad Nemen B'Yisurim. Eid Echad is believed in Yisurim. Even a person is not a kosher witness. A relative... So you can have a relative as a mashgiach. He's not a kosher witness. He's a relative. In iser and heter, in treif and kosher, a witness is believed.
Okay.
No, you're bright and early.
She says, in a case overseas.
That's a different story.
Can I ask a couple of questions?
Yeah.
First of all, is this pertaining to non-Jews?
No, by non-Jews... There's a completely different law of witnesses. Completely. The Rambam says in Ochos Melachim, one witness is enough, certain relatives are not. It's a completely different concept.
Okay, so, just let me hear something. A guy comes and says he beat somebody up.
Yep.
He's not to be believed.
Correct.
And even if it keeps happening?
No, but if a guy says I damaged his property...
No, I'm saying beat the person up.
Right, but I'm saying, if you're talking about monetary...
I'm saying the guy... Guy's a violent guy.
One minute. If I say I beat you up and therefore I cause damages to you, then I'm believed. In the monetary aspect, not in the criminal aspect. You understand?
You get money, but not.
Correct. A person is believed to testify about himself in monetary issues, not in criminal issues.
But what if this person is to be taken care of? I mean, I'm talking about the criminal sense.
That's between God and best. God runs the world. God runs the world. And if a guy kills somebody nobody saw, right? I'll give you an example. Yeah, the bombing just took place. Officially, nobody saw it, right? Uh-huh. There's no witnesses.
I'm gonna bring that.
Don't bring it too far. There's no witnesses, right?
Well.
So, not only that, according to halacha, even though we're going way off the topic now, according to halacha, the Torah says, "Al pi shnayim edim yakum dover." Things can only be based on the testimony of two witnesses. If you can prove a murder with DNA, according to Torah law, it's worthless.
Whether the murderer is a Jew or a non-Jew, by the way?
No,
let's talk about Jew and Jew. Let's leave the non-Jews out. According to halacha, when it comes to capital punishment cases, circumstantial evidence is not enough. The Gemara gives an example. You see Reuven chasing Shimon into a room with a knife. Okay? Reuven's chasing Shimon into a room with a knife. There's no witnesses in the room. Reuven comes out of the room with a bloody knife. And you walk into the room, nobody's there, and Shimon's dead on the floor. It's not mine. Shimon's dead on the floor. The din is, you have no proof that Reuven did the murder.
So that's why OJ is out. It's exactly the story.
There is a difference, though, that Rambam in Hilchos Melachim discusses how in the Goyish secular system, a Goy is believed to testify against the Goy, whatever. It is a completely different thing. Now we're talking about Jews.
Okay, Jews, I'm talking about...
Correct.
He happened to be this, not Jewish, but I'm saying if he's...
Thank God.
His whole story was Jewish, and nobody saw him doing anything...
Now, the Gemara says, so what's going to happen to such a criminal? He's going to get off scot-free. Mm-hmm. Okay, not Scott Peterson, but scot-free. So how is he going to get... L'cheira, how is God allow such a thing? So the Gemara has a simple solution. The Gemara tells a story that one time, this guy will be underneath the ladder, and a guy will fall on top of him, and he'll kill him. So the murderer who killed somebody else intentionally, right, will be murdered. God has his ways of running the world. Let's not mix into God's business. But according to halacha, coming back to Lisana, you're not allowed to testify falsely. There has to be kosher witnesses. There has to be witnesses that actually saw the thing that happened and how it happened. And Bezdin checks the guy out to make sure that he's not lying.
In the case where he can't swear, someone said he stole something, and he can't swear, does he pay the knas too?
No. There's no knas because it's not Geneva. Because he did it in front of people. By, there's only knas by Ganef, not by Gazlan. Okay. Now, here the Torah says, "Lisana v'reacha et shaker," that you're not allowed to bear false witness against your neighbor. In Vayeschanan, when the Aseres HaDibros mentioned the second time, over there the Torah says, "Lisana v'reacha et shav," you're not allowed to have vain witness. You're not allowed to bear vain witness. The Rabban explains, why does the Torah say here eight shaker, which means false witness, and over there it means eight shav, vain testimony. And the Rabban explains very simple. What happens if your testimony really is not going to matter? It's not really binding. Your testimony is not going to make it or break it. For instance, the Rabban gives an example. For example, an expression of mere intent to give a gift is not binding. Okay? In other words, what happens if a witness testifies falsely that somebody intended to give a gift? He intended to give a gift. So practically, even if I intended, I could change my mind until I give it. So the witness really didn't bear any power to his testimony. So the guy could think, so what did I do wrong? I didn't do any Aveda, because I didn't make the guy pay for no reason. I didn't get him killed for no reason. I didn't do anything. You know, it's no big loss from what I testified. So the second commandment says, even that is forbidden. Even that is forbidden in the Aseres HaDibros. Now, the Mefarshim explain, so why in the first Aser Sedibis does the Torah say eight shaker, false witness? And the second one it says about intent. So they explain as follows. The first commandments, the Jews were tzaddikim, because they didn't sin in the ego. The second ten commandments basically were said after the Jews sinned in the golden calf. So the Jews were on a much lower level. By the first commandments, people considered an intent as happening. So there was never such a problem of a vain witness, because people considered an intent as binding. Yeah. They used to consider it that way. Then when the world became corrupt, they changed. It's not binding, it's unbearing. The Gemara says, there's a pasuk we say every day in davening, David emes bulvavai, one who speaks truth in his heart. So Gemara says, what does it mean, speaking truth in your heart? You either speak or you don't speak. What do you mean, speak in your heart? So the Gemara tells a story. There was once a guy, a businessman, was davening. And a guy came to him to offer him to buy goods from him. The guy didn't know the guy was davening. He's a guy, whatever. Comes over to the guy and says, I'll give you $500 for your goods. And the guy was davening. He ignored him because he was in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. So the guy thought, I probably didn't offer him enough. So he said, okay, I'll give you $750. And then the guy finished davening. He didn't say anything. Finished davening. So technically, what would a normal Jew do? Take the 750. He didn't agree on the 500. He didn't say anything, right? So halachically, you're allowed to take the 750. This Jew said to the guy, you know what? Granted, I was in the middle of davening, but when you said 500, in my mind, I accepted it, and therefore I'm only taking 500. That's called speaking truth in your heart. That if you think of something, that's what you do. I mean, if it's good. I mean, not, if you think about killing somebody, don't do it. But if you think about good things, you should do it, because that's called speaking truth in the heart. So anyway, now one last thing about this commandment. We learned the first commandment is connected to the sixth, second to the seventh. Okay, this one, this commandment is connected to the fourth, which is keeping Shabbos. What's the connection between the mitzvah of keeping Shabbos, not to testify falsely? Because Shabbos is a testimony that God created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. When the Jew says Vayechulu, he's testifying that God made the world. So therefore the Torah says don't testify falsely. That corresponds with the mitzvah of keeping Shabbos. So that's the connection between the two. Okay, next one of the Ten Commandments, which is a very difficult one. What?
You mentioned about an age show. Like, technically, you're not allowed to bring somebody to show as if he's going to be an aide, right? Just to get the other guy to think that, here, I have another witness on my side.
Correct. That's also considered, no, but that's more vain, that's more of a falseness. But let me just say the case that you're talking about. This is in Halacha. In fact, the Gemara talks about it, the Rambam talks about it. If you owe me $100, $1,000, and I have one witness, so I come over to a friend of mine, I say, listen, I need a favor from you. Just stand next to me in court. You don't have to testify, because you can't, you didn't see it. You don't testify. But I want my friend to think that I have two witnesses. I want him to think that I have two witnesses. So he'll admit. Why will he admit? It's a very simple thing. If you say you don't owe me money, right, and I bring two witnesses that you do, you become an established liar in court. Peasant says this guy's a liar. If he's a liar, he can never be accepted as a witness. Right? So what does the guy do? He says to the guy, So a person would rather admit than be called a liar. And he says anyway he's up at Creek, because the guy has two witnesses. So what happens? The guy says to his friend, I don't need you to testify. All I want you to do is just stand there. That the guy should think that I have a second witness. You're not allowed to do that either. That's included in this concept of Lisana Vereyacha Eid Shoker. Because you're bearing, indirectly, you're bearing false testimony. Because you're causing the guy to think that that's what's going to happen.
Aren't you also causing him to do an error?
Of what? Of admitting?
Well,
what's that very admitting?
No,
yeah, but he's not testifying. He's not testifying. He's just standing there.
Even if he really owes you the money.
Yeah. Yeah, even if he owes you the money. See, there's a big problem with all this. Not the problem. I lend you $1,000. Yeah? I'm a nice guy. I lend you $1,000. But I don't have proof that you owe me the $1,000. Yeah? So, you're not a moral person. And you say, what are you talking about? You never lent me $1,000. Right? So, l'cheira, I come to Beth and say, Beth, I don't understand something. I'm a nice guy. I even trusted him that I didn't even demand him to sign an IOU note. We didn't even do it in front of him. I'm such a nice guy. I trust him. Look at his mom's and look what he's doing to me. He's not a mensch. Right? He's not a mensch. You know, litigation has nothing to do with being a mensch. Bezin still can't obligate you to pay the money. Legally. If you have a contract that's not written properly, and because of that, Bezni can't obligate you to pay the money. But you guys said, what are you talking about? Look, you know, you guys not a mensch. Bezni says, granted, you're not a mensch, but we still can't make you pay. Mensch is mensch, and money is money. And just because you're not a mensch, we can't make you pay.
We learned you could go to his house, break in his house, and take $1,000 that he owes you.
Yeah, but you better be able to prove it somehow that the guy owes you the money.
You better pay up.
I don't know if someone steals something, you can't steal it back.
If the only way you can get it back is by taking it, then you're allowed to. Like if somebody steals something from you and you have no proof that he stole it, but you know he stole it, and you see the object in his house, and you have the opportunity of taking it back, you're allowed to.
But obviously he couldn't bring witnesses that you took.
Yeah, but the problem is, what's he going to do if he brings witnesses that you stole it? You know, then it's... No. Kain of Menaganef Potter is only from Kefil, not from the Keren. So, people think Kain of Menaganef, you could steal from Menaganef. Because the Gemara says, if you steal from Menaganef, you're Potter. You don't have to pay. First of all, the Gemara says, it only meets in the double. But it doesn't mean you can steal from a ganef. But here it's your object, and the only way you can get it back is by doing it.
But even stealing from a ganef, you can't get hana from it.
You're not allowed to steal from a ganef. But here we're talking about somebody to get back.
What's from it? What is yours?
No, you stole something from him.
Right.
Can I steal it from you? Because you said it's not yours anyway, so...
But he's still stealing if you don't tell him. I'm taking back my thing.
Why is it stealing?
Because you're
it's yours.
In the room by yourself, and you're just put in your pocket.
No, you're as bad as the next guy.
It's no. I'm saying if it's yours, if you steal something from me,
right.
And you left it on the table, can I grab it back?
It's yours.
Right? No.
I thought you said if I steal from him.
That's a different. We're talking about two different things.
Can you steal it to return it to rightful owner?
No.
You know it's stolen for sure. You know whose it is and you want to get it back.
It's Robin Hood, no?
Yeah.
Similar to Robin Hood.
Atevis l'balchev makrim shechav l'acherim min alot.
No, Robin Hood wasn't his money. He was stealing really. This is yours.
No, he said to steal for somebody else. That you're not allowed to do.
No.
He could do it, you can't. The guy himself could do it, you. Somebody else can't. Yeah, you could tell them where it is and then go get it and whatever. But there's a whole shaila. What happens if you owe me $1,000, yeah, can I borrow from you $1,000 and then say, you know what, I'm not paying you back because you owe me $1,000?
Yeah.
Well, it's not so simple. It's not so simple. What? But I'll tell you nothing personal. Just because it sounds good to you doesn't mean you're allowed to do it. There's a lot of things in halacha that sound good, but that doesn't mean you're allowed. Rabbanut also sounds good, but you still can't do it.
So in this case, you wouldn't be?
It's not so simple. Because the question is, can Bezdin connect the two issues together?
Somebody owes you $1,000.
And you could prove it?
And they...
Well, I mean, you could prove it or not. What happens if I... One minute. I lend you $1,000. No witnesses. So I have basically no proof of it. And you're refusing to pay me. Okay? So a while later, I come to you and say, you know what? Lend me $1,000. And he says, yeah, but I'm going to write a document. Yeah, I can't come later to Bez and say, well, listen, I lent him $1,000, and now he lent me $1,000, so we're even. You can't do that. Because do you have proof that you lent him the $1,000? No. He has proof that he lent you the $1,000, so what are you going to get? You can't gain. The Bez is going to make you pay the debt.
He
didn't
have proof both ways, you could do it. Yeah.
Correct.
Or not $1,000, but monetary value of a car or whatever else you could... Hold on, because you have proof that he owes you. Now you have, in your position, one of his belongings that you could hold on to it because he owes you.
I had an interesting shaila lately. I have to remember the details because it was a few weeks ago. A school. Somebody owed somebody money. Okay. And the place went bankrupt. Okay? And they owe the people money. Now, the person owes that school money. So the person says, give me the money. The problem is, over there was a story that if they didn't pay him, they were going to evict them from the building. So it was a whole complicated, yeah, it was a whole complicated story that got involved. But there's a din, if I owe him $1,000, and he owes him $1,000, sometimes Bezdin will take the $1,000 from me and give it to him. She put it up, not in my mitzloshtem, I mean, all the complicated things in the Gemara.
What are we on the subject?
But we're on the subject. What subject are we on?
But stealing. And owing people's money. Some people, they stole you for so many years. Let's say you lend somebody money, and then they say after a certain amount of years, if it passes by, you don't have to collect back.
Jesus.
Is it like after 7 years?
Shemitah, but first of all, you make a principle that doesn't work today.
It doesn't work today.
No.
I heard it was 7 years.
There's no concept of bankruptcy in halacha.
Looks for credit cards.
In halacha, there's no concept of bankruptcy. If I owe you money, I don't have money, and I declare bankruptcy, it doesn't mean I don't owe you the money anymore. There is no concept of bankruptcy in halacha. I still owe you the money. You can't milk a dry cow. So, but I owe you the money. I'll give you an example. There's women in the room. A married woman, according to Halacha's personal, and it's a whole different halacha today, okay, because today's community property. According to halacha, anything a woman owns belongs to the husband. Okay, nothing personal, but that's the way it works. Now, if a woman... It's a good thing Marty left already. What happens if a woman damages somebody? A woman beat somebody, burned down somebody's house. Okay, so the husband's not responsible for what his wife does. Okay, but the wife technically has no money to pay. So what's the halacha? The halacha is it's a debt. And if the woman ever gets divorced, or the husband dies, that she gets money, she has to pay it. Could be 100 years from now. She has to pay it. It's a debt that she, right now she has no money, she has nothing to pay with. Because everything she owns belongs to her husband. In halacha, today is a whole different story.
So he's not basically saying he's not obligated to pay her
debt. Her debt. You know, you have a big issue today in the schools. And today, again, there's a concept called Dina de Machusa Dina, that if there's a law of the land, it transcends in a certain monetary issues Torah law. For instance, technically, the Gemara says, Chereshet of a cotton, but let's stick to the cotton. The Gemara says, starting up with a kid is bad news. If you damage them, you have to pay. If they damage you, they don't have to pay. Because they're not responsible for their actions. That means if a 10-year-old kid, you know, it always happens in school. Kids break somebody else's glasses and they get into a fight and they break their this and they did, you know, they break things, right? In pure Torah law, a kid is not responsible for his actions. If a kid goes over to his friend and breaks his glasses, in Torah law, he doesn't have to pay. Now, in civil law, and the din is, even when he becomes bar mitzvah, and then he gets his own money, he doesn't have to pay. A slave who has no money of his own because everything belongs to the master, when he becomes free, he has to pay up the damages. A woman who has no money of her own, when she gets widowed or divorced, when she gets her money, she would have to pay it on her own. A kid is not responsible for his damages. So if a kid before a day before bar mitzvah, let's say, breaks somebody else's iPod or Nintendo or Pump Pilot, yeah, he doesn't have to pay. Next week he's going to be a rich bar mitzvah kid, makes $100,000 at the bar mitzvah, he doesn't have to pay. But in civil law, parents are responsible to pay for the kid's damages. So many times, a bezdin today will paskin, because civil law demands it, then you would have to pay. They might. What?
If the husband is very wealthy and the wife put the fire in some home, let's say.
Tough luck.
She said, I don't have money.
Right.
But the husband is very wealthy.
He's not obligated to pay for his wife.
He's no mechuyah.
You see, you're obligated for everything his wife does?
Well, normally when you marry someone,
but in civil law they are.
Exactly.
I said in Torah law.
I know what you said.
But in Torah, but sir, and that's what I'm saying. Certain times they won't, even by kids.
In Torah law. In Torah law, when he buys her for 500 cows, if he doesn't have money or something.
Buys her for 500 cows?
Kidding. He doesn't have the money, something value off. So can't he protect her with the value of the money if there's a problem? So how does he protect her? In the Torah, the ketubah says what?
That if he divorces or dies, he has to give her something.
No.
Yeah.
No more support. To support her.
There's a mitzvah, but the money, the 200 zuz in the ksuba, is for divorce or death. Then there are other obligations of a ksuba. He has to heal her, he has to support her, whatever.
Is this part of support?
No, support has to feed her. He's not responsible for the action she does.
She's crazy and she's doing something. He's not responsible. Nobody's responsible.
So let him lock her up.
She's locking up.
Worse by the second.
That's it, man. We're getting worse by the second. Huh? We're getting worse by the second.
But the other way around, it's not.
Right.
He has to pay for him.
Married. Is that what you want to hear?
Yeah.
Yeah. If the husband damages, the wife has to pay. Does that make sense to you?
No.
She doesn't even have money to pay for it.
Let's say she has.
She cannot have.
She borrows her own money from us.